नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
It's October 6, 2012 in Vrindavan, India, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, Text 12. Na saru menita sarva bhutale yavati pudaha kaman kama yamano sao tasya tasyo papachyate. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Puranjana had unlimited desires for sense enjoyment. Consequently, he traveled all over the world to find a place where all his desires could be fulfilled. Unfortunately, he found a feeling of insufficiency everywhere. Purport. Srila Vidyapati, a great Vaishnava poet, has sung, Tatala Sakaite Varibindu Sama Suta Mitta Ramani Samaje. Material sense gratification with society, friendship, and love is herein compared to, what's it compared to? A drop of water falling on a desert. A desert requires oceans of water to satisfy it, and if only a drop of water is supplied, what is its use? Many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, I remember we were in Radhakund, and we had given away one of our canteens to the rickshawwala in Puri, so we only had one canteen, and you couldn't easily buy bottled water everywhere. It was very hot. And it was four of us with just one canteen. We were so, so thirsty. So if you've ever been so thirsty, and if someone came and took a little eyedropper and put one drop of water on your tongue, what is its use? I'm going on with the purport. Similarly, the living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is stated in the Vedanta Sutra is Anandamayo Bhyasat, full of enjoyment. Being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity is also seeking complete enjoyment. So the scientists call this the pleasure principle, that we're all seeking pleasure. Like in the military, they sometimes have a heat-seeking missile. You've heard of that? It's a weapon. It can sense heat, and it goes toward not quite as fine as the Brahmastra that can go right to the baby in the womb and not hurt anybody else, like Aswatthama threw. But we are all pleasure-seeking beings. Where's their pleasure? Where's their pleasure? Where's their pleasure? Where's their pleasure? But what kind of pleasure? What does Prabhupada say here? What's the adjective he uses? What kind? Anybody remember? We just read. Complete. The living entity is also seeking complete enjoyment. Now Prabhupada's saying complete because in the verse, Puranjana found insufficiency. However, Prabhupada continues, complete enjoyment cannot be achieved separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In his wanderings in the different species of life, the living entity may taste some kind of enjoyment in one body or another, but full enjoyment of the senses cannot be obtained in any material body. Thus, Puranjana, the living entity, wanders in different types of bodies, but everywhere meets frustration in his attempt to enjoy. In other words, the spiritual spark covered by matter cannot fully enjoy the senses in any circumstance in material life. So Prabhupada used the word complete, and now he's using the word fully. Would everyone like to be fully satisfied? Or just partially satisfied? Is that all right? No. Okay. But here Prabhupada's saying, the spiritual spark covered by matter cannot fully enjoy the senses in any circumstance in material life. Now Prabhupada's going to give some examples. And I'm sure we've all heard these examples many times. A deer may become absorbed in the musical sounds vibrated by the hunter, but the result is that it loses its life. Similarly, a fish is very expert in gratifying his tongue, but when it eats the bait offered by the fisherman, it loses its life. Even the elephant, who is so strong, is captured and loses its independence while satisfying its genitals with a female elephant. So here Prabhupada is giving three examples of how attempting to satisfy one's senses leads to some sort of destruction. So this is one reason why Prabhupada's given so far two reasons why we can't have full satisfaction of the senses. What was the first reason? The pleasure. Okay, then there's three reasons. Pleasure here is like a drop of water. Next reason? We can't get complete, but why? Because the enjoyment here is like a drop of water. And what did he say? Complete enjoyment is only possible with Krishna. And now what's the point he's making here with this deer and the fish and the elephant? It just leads to destruction. Another reason it's not complete is not only does the enjoyment end, but the enjoyment leads to some sort of destruction. Some sort of loss of life or independence. Okay, continuing at the purport. In each and every species of life, the living entity gets a body to satisfy various senses, but he cannot enjoy all his senses at one time. In the human form of life, he gets an opportunity to enjoy all his senses pervertedly. So it seems that Prabhupada's saying each animal species really has a certain sense that they're expert at. In human life, one can satisfy all the senses pervertedly. But the result is that he becomes so harassed in his attempted sense gratification that he ultimately becomes morose. As he tries to satisfy his senses more and more, he becomes more and more entangled. Na sadu meneta sarva bhutale yavati puraha kaman kama yamanoso tasya tasyo patataye. King Puranjana had unlimited desires for sense enjoyment. Consequently, he traveled all over the world to find a place where all his desires could be fulfilled. Unfortunately, he found a feeling of insufficiency everywhere. So this is what drives us. In the preface to Nectar Devotion, one of my favorite parts of Srila Prabhupada's books, he says what's driving the living entity is rasa, some taste, some pleasure. Whatever we are doing because we expect to get some pleasure out of it. Even things we are doing that we wish we weren't doing, if we have some bad habit and we're thinking, why can't I stop this? Whatever we're doing because there's some kind of pleasure in it. Or imagined pleasure, some sort of taste. Prabhupada says there's nothing beyond the 12 rasas. So we're trying to enjoy something. Maybe it's a ghastly, perverted ghastly rasa or something. But we're looking for happiness. And that's what's tempting us. You know, we're like a donkey with a carrot in the front and a stick in the back. So there is happiness over there, and there is my distress, and I'm going toward the happiness. And also, it's quite interesting that we become happy by making others happy. Have you noticed that? That we like to make other people happy. We're not interested just simply in our own happiness. We want our friends, our family members, our associates, we want them also to be happy. And we want them to be happy because of something that we did. We like to give a gift to people and see them be happy. We like to provide some facility to others and see them be happy. In fact, what's quite interesting is that our happiness at others' happiness is usually greater than our direct happiness. If you cook a nice meal and you invite friends over and they enjoy the meal, you get more pleasure from them enjoying the meal than from your eating the meal alone. Or if you take your money and you use it for a gift for your friend, you get more happiness than if you spend that money on yourself. Isn't that often true? Have we all experienced this? So this is a little hint, this sense that we get more by giving is a little hint of where we can find complete happiness. So although everyone accepts that life is meant for happiness, Srila Prabhupada was asked once, I believe in South America, what is the purpose of life? He said, Ananda, the purpose of life is to be happy. Again, everyone knows this. The materialists know this also. If you talk to anyone who has children, what do you want for your children? I want them to be happy. It's our essential principle that we are happiness beings. Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We're part of Krishna, who's Anandamaya Vyasat. We're also joyful. As soon as we realize the self, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, what do you realize? Oh, I'm joyful. I am full of happiness. But unfortunately, a materially conditioned soul is looking for happiness in a backwards, messed up way. So I thought we'd look at different kinds of happiness, because here Paranjana is traveling from one body to another, trying to taste different happiness. Just like in many cities, there's a Chinese restaurant, and there's an Italian restaurant, and there's a Greek restaurant, and like that. So Paranjana is trying, let me be happy in a fish body, in a bird body, in a deer body, and we are all doing this. We think, oh, maybe if I was born in South India in a Brahmin family, then I would be happy. You know? Maybe if I were a man, maybe if I were a woman, maybe if I had black hair, maybe if I had red hair, maybe if my nose was smaller, maybe if my nose was bigger, maybe if I had a mathematical brain, maybe if I had the brain to remember Sanskrit, maybe if I was more shy, maybe if I was more on the front, then I would be happy. And so therefore we get bodies at one after another. Even in this life, the little child is thinking, 5-year-old child is thinking, when I get to be 7, then I will be happy. Do you all remember that? And when you're 7, you're thinking, when I get to be 12, then I will be happy. And when you're 12, you think, when I graduate from school, then I will be happy. And then you think, when I get a job, then I will be happy. When I get married, then I will be happy. When I have children, then I will be happy. When my children grow up and leave home, then I will be happy. When I can renounce my wife and family and leave, then I will be happy. Oh, I made so many mistakes. If only I could try again, then I would be happy. And again, we're going over and over and over and over and over. So we are each of these bodies and situations is some combination of the mode, karna guna sangasya, sadasad sarva yonishu. So each particular, like each one of us has a somewhat different body, and each of our bodies is some combination of the modes of nature. So if your body's very much in the mode of ignorance, then your happiness is not really happiness. You can't even call it happiness. It's just like the happiness we get when we insult somebody. Do you ever feel happy by insulting somebody? Especially if it's a very clever insult. So that's happiness in the mode of ignorance. There's something. I am so good at insulting others. I am so clever. I am so much better than this person. But there's no joy in it. Right? It's sort of a heavy, closed, dark sort of happiness, right? I'm not the only person who's experienced this. You've experienced this? Or no? Nobody else insults people, only I've done this? So, that's not real happiness. It's not like expansive joy. So that's happiness in the mode of ignorance. Or happiness in the mode of ignorance is, I'm so evil. You know, the criminal, I've killed 5 people and I never got caught. So that's, again, it's not joy. It's just something. It's something. But it's not, you can't even call it happiness. Then happiness in the mode of passion is I'm a good person. I'm righteous. I give in charity. Everybody's praising me. Happiness in the mode of passion is very much dependent on others' acknowledgments. You know, because you're not really having any happiness within. It's more other people are telling you you're happy and you're sort of believing it. So when I was 13, I remember once I was babysitting and the children had fallen asleep and I thought, what is the purpose of life? Well, the purpose of life is to be happy. So am I happy? So I made a list of all the things I had in life. And I looked at the list and I said, I guess I must be happy. So that's not happiness. Happiness in the mode of passion is something like having a photograph. It's just on the mental platform. And you're looking at the photograph where you're smiling with your family in front of a big house with a big car. And you say, see how happy I am? But you're not really feeling anything. Or there may be a little bit of happiness in the beginning. This example of these animals is like that. Oh, what sweet music, you know, and then you're killed. So a lot of material happiness is like that. Oh, what good food, and then I get a stomach ache, or I get diabetes or something. So maybe a little bit in the beginning. Then happiness in the mode of goodness. So the question's asked in the seventh canto, how is it that although the Lord is impartial, he appears to be partial to the demigods and the devotees? And the answer is he's impartial, but he favors the mode of goodness. Why? Because sattva means not only good, but sattva also means? What does sattva mean? Besides good. Pure and? Existence, yes? Truth. And Krishna also said with existence, he says, anything that's true exists, anything that doesn't exist is not true. So truth. So basically, sattva gun, you're getting closer to truth. And naturally, the closer you get to truth, the closer you are to happiness, because the absolute truth is happy. So it's a very simple example. This cup has water, and water is meant to put in my body. That's true. However, the cup is not meant to put in my body. That's false. Therefore, if I try to eat the cup, I will suffer. That's not that anybody is partial. The cup maker did not make this cup to cause me suffering, or if I take the cup and hit myself on the head with it. Because that's false. That's not its use. So the closer we are to reality, the more we actually are happy. Therefore, in sattva guna, a person actually feels some real happiness, some real peace. In Rajagun, a little bit, and in Tamagun, basically none. Something that they think is happiness. So that's one category of happiness. And then, of course, beyond that, the transcendental, which we'll get to in a moment. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives three categories, three very different categories of happiness in regard to rasa. He says there's physical happiness of the body, things like food, good sleep, sex, soft, warm clothing, things like that. Then he calls that earthly happiness. Then there's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls heavenly happiness. That's emotional happiness. You have a nice relationship with other people. You have friendships with others. You have love. Prabhupada talks about here society, friendship, and love. So that's the swarga ras. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about the ultimate spiritual ras. Then Nupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also talks about three kinds of happiness. He talks about any kind of material happiness, physical, emotional, goodness, passion, ignorance, Brahman happiness, and bhakti happiness. And then you can also categorize happiness by karma happiness. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaha miti manyate. I am the doer. I have created this company. I have, you know, raised a good son who's an honor student at Harvard. I have done this, I have done that kind of happiness. And there's gyan happiness, aham brahmasmi, I am not this body, understanding the Brahman. There's yoga happiness, Jai Shri Shri Panitai, Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Radhishama Sundar. There's yoga happiness. I'm so powerful that I can become smaller than the smallest, and anything I want I can just get, and I can control others' minds. And then there's bhakti happiness. Now, no matter how you categorize different kinds of happiness, we can see that there are some problems with anything other than bhakti. So the first problem is that any happiness other than bhakti, it starts from a sense of suffering. And without that suffering, there's no happiness. If there's no hunger, does food taste good? No. If you've just eaten a big meal and you're full and someone comes with your favorite preparation, can you eat it? Does it taste good if you eat it? You don't even taste it. So there has to be hunger. To enjoy sleep, you have to be tired. All material enjoyment comes from a sense of emptiness, of incompleteness, of insufficiency, of neediness. That I feel I'm incomplete, I need something. And one is trying to take in sense objects to fill that need. Thomas Merton, who is a very famous Christian monk, who wrote an appreciation of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. He said, all of us have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. So just like when Mother Yasoda was giving Krishna her own bodily milk, the milk on the stove, who's also a person, is thinking, Krishna's belly is unlimited and Mother Yasoda's milk is unlimited. How will I ever get to do any service? And it boiled over. So Krishna's unlimited, anantarupam. So this God-shaped vacuum in our heart, it's unlimited. And I'm trying to fill it with things in the world. You know, it just doesn't work. But my trying to fill in the world comes from this feeling that God's not there. It comes from a sense of emptiness. Spiritual happiness is quite different. Spiritual happiness comes from a sense that Krishna's in my heart. Riddhe share junatistiti. That Krishna's in the heart. And those who are spiritually aware, they feel that Krishna's in the heart. Instead of having an unlimitedly large hole, they have unlimitedly large bliss. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, in commenting on the Shikshastika, says, Anandam Vrivardhanam. Although the jiva is minute, the jiva's capacity for enjoyment is infinite. So when one becomes aware that Krishna is in the heart, then one is full. And then instead of being needy and trying to get things to fill that need, one is full and overflowing. So many places, Srila Prabhupada says that the devotee is not interested in sense gratification because they are already full. Not because they're averse or hard-hearted, but because they're already full. If you have billions and billions of dollars, like Bill Gates, he doesn't go begging on the street. He has no need to. He can't spend all of his money in his life, even if he tries. Impossible. So that's how the devotee feels. The devotee feels full, and therefore the devotee is not taking, the devotee is giving. Materially, if you try to find happiness by giving, like we said in the beginning, after a while you get exhausted and you say, oh, what about me? But the devotee is always getting for me. The devotee is always getting for themselves because it's unlimited. Like the spring at the bottom of Radhakund, it keeps going. There's an unlimited spring of bliss in our heart. If one just removes the plug of envy, then it fills the heart and it's overflowing. And then the devotee doesn't even need to think about themselves and their own sense gratification. Why? A little child who's taken care of by the parents, or the traditional wife who was taken care of by the husband, they don't have to think about their own maintenance. Or if you work for a very good company, you don't have to think, am I going to get paid? You don't even have to think about it. You just concentrate on your duties and you forget about yourself. So the devotee feels like that. Material happiness also leads to suffering. The result of all material happiness is suffering. First of all, it's based on suffering. You have to feel miserable in order for happiness to feel like happiness. And the next thing is the happiness leads to suffering. You have to pay for it. You have to pay some sort of price, and a materialist doesn't want to pay the price. So it feels very painful. So it's like a suffering sandwich, you know? Suffering before, a drop of enjoyment in the middle, and suffering after. Very tasty meal. Now, Maya Devi has her restaurant. We are serving now the suffering sandwich. In order to taste the nice drop in the middle, first you must suffer, and after you taste the drop, then you will suffer. How will you suffer? Because it won't satisfy you. You know, the Prabhupada tells that story of the Brahmana who was very hungry, and he went into an untouchable's house to eat, but this untouchable was very poor, and so he didn't have much food. And the Brahmana ate the little bit of food, and then he said, "Oh, I have lost my caste, and I am still hungry." So the reason there's suffering afterwards is because material happiness doesn't touch the soul. It's something superficial. It's just like if you get really hot and sweaty and you don't bathe, but you wash your clothes and then you put on clean clothes over your dirty, sweaty body. Will that be pleasing? Or if you put petrol in your car and you don't eat. Fifth chapter, 13th chapter, Krishna says, we're not doing anything here. We're just observing. The soul is not really doing all these things. It's like a movie or a dream. I remember one time I took a nap on a fast day. I was fasting also from water, and in my dream, I was drinking cup after cup after cup of water. At one point in my dream, I took a big jug of water, and I'm drinking and drinking. And then in the dream, I thought, what's going on? Why am I still thirsty? And then I woke up, and like, oh, I need real water. So we're not satisfied, because it's not touching us. It's not, Prabhupada compares it like you have a big glove. So some of you who've never been out of India, maybe you've never worn gloves, but those of us who come from other parts of the world, sometimes in winter you wear this mitten, puts all four fingers together. You know, big, thick thing. It's like I was in Radhadesh last winter when the temperature went to 20 below Celsius. And if you have this big glove on your hand, what can you enjoy with touching? Can you enjoy anything? So this body is like a big, heavy glove. You ever feel like that? It's like this big thing you're dragging around with you that covers your senses. Prabhupada's talking here about full enjoyment of the senses. But you can't. You're covered. So it's not touching ourselves. And it's incomplete, it's partial happiness, a little bit. Like being very, very hungry and you go and you're given 1/8 of a chapati and 1 teaspoon of rice. Oh, I gave you food, but it's incomplete. It doesn't touch the self, and incomplete. And we get a very peculiar phenomenon with material enjoyment. You get satiation, but not satisfaction. Satiation, but not satisfaction. Satiation is like this. You eat pizza for breakfast, you eat pizza for lunch, you eat pizza for dinner, you eat pizza for breakfast, you eat pizza for lunch, you eat pizza for dinner, you eat pizza for lunch, right? I read a story once about this young man who worked in an ice cream shop, and one of the payments was unlimited access to ice cream. So he ate unlimited ice cream. And after a while, the ice cream started making him feel nauseated, but he kept eating it. And after a while, he couldn't eat ice cream anymore his whole life. If he'd even go near it, he would vomit. So that's called satiation. I can't take any more. The thing itself loses pleasure. I have to leave it for a while. It's called bhogatyaga. I have to enjoy and then I have to renounce. And then I have to enjoy, I have to renounce. Sometimes when people are in the renunciation stage, they think, oh, I am very renounced. But then they go back to the enjoyment. So that's the satiation, but never satisfied. And maybe a person may be satisfied, dukalayama shashvatam, may be satisfied for a few moments. Ah, I have a perfect house, perfect spouse, perfect children, perfect wealth, perfect everything. Yes, everything's good. Siddham, ambogi. I am perfect and happy. And then, you know, the toilet breaks or something happens. And then again, one is not happy. So there's no real satisfaction. You don't say, I'm fully satisfied. Anyone here ever been fully satisfied for 24 hours through material happiness? It's very sad. But we get satiated. We say, oh, I've had enough, I can't take any more. Spiritual happiness, it's complete. Prabhupada uses the word here, complete and fully. One's completely satisfied. One is completely satisfied, but one is never satiated. One never says, oh, no, I can't have any more. No more. Too much happiness. I need a break. You know, the gopis don't say, oh, now we need a break. They say, we can't even have our eyes blink. I don't even notice my eyes are blinking. But they're saying, we don't, can't even have our eyes blink. We don't even want that much of a break. So never satiated. Because spiritual happiness keeps getting newer and newer and newer and newer and newer. It's full of unlimited variety. It's not just like Om Shanti. It's full of all different rasas and tastes and pastimes, which are always newer and newer and full of variety. Inconceivable variety. How can we conceive that Srimati Radharani never cooks the same thing twice? The cowherd boys always play a new game. You know? Full of variety and expansion, expansion. Prabhupada says how Krishna looks at the gopis and becomes happier when he sees them, happier and more beautiful. They look at him, they become happier and more beautiful. He looks at them, and there's a competition never ends with the growing of their happiness. So the poor materialist, he doesn't diagnose their problem properly. The materialistic person thinks, okay, the problem with my material enjoyment, like this Paranjana, is I'm just in the wrong circumstances. The reason that I have my suffering sandwich, and the reason that I'm satiated but not satisfied, and the reason it's incomplete, is I've just got the wrong body. Like nowadays people do surgery, you know, change male to female, female to male. Or some people do surgery to make themselves look like an animal. You don't see this here, but we see this in the West. They put artificial horns in their forehead and spikes in their cheeks. I just get a different body. Or even in this life, someone will think, I just need a new partner. I've had this husband too long. Let me find another one. Then I will be happy. A different job. A different country, different kinds of clothes, different kinds of foods, different kinds of exercise routine. If I just try this and I just try that, if I just move my furniture from here to there, then I will be happy. And my dear friends, we can do the same thing in the name of Krishna consciousness. We can say, if only I'd adjust my material circumstances this way and this way and this way, then I'll be Krishna conscious. If I just move to Vrindavan, then I'll be Krishna conscious. If I get married, then I'll be Krishna conscious. If I get rid of this marriage, then I'll be Krishna conscious. If I just do this service, then I'll be Krishna conscious. If I just take this vow, then I'll be Krishna conscious. If I just do this thing, it's the same thing. Trying to adjust, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur discusses this in Madhurya Kadambani, he calls it indecision, where one's mind is just, should I marry? Should I renounce? Should I live in the Dham? Should I live someplace else? Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? Always adjusting the externals. I have a good friend who would move to a new house every week if she could, and her husband would like to stay in the same house his whole life if he could. So I told her, just move your furniture around sometimes. It'll satisfy you. Like that thief who moved the bags around instead of stealing. So she does that. You know, every couple of months, she moves around all of her furniture. But that's all we're doing in this world. It's just goodness, passion, and ignorance. It's only protons, neutrons, and electrons. That's all there is here. And we're just moving them around. So I hope I won't offend anybody from China. But when I was in China, they fed me sticky rice. You know what's sticky rice? Very glutinous rice. So you boil it. Of course, they don't put any salt. And then you stick it. And they make different things out of it. But the taste is always the same. Something like solid air. So they make, you know, they had one thing, I thought it was a samosa, and it was sticky rice. And one day I thought they were bringing me cake, and it was sticky rice. Another day I thought it was halva, and it was sticky rice. So it's like that. You're thinking, oh, if I'm in this body, this situation, I'll finally get, but that's not the problem. It's a misdiagnosis. Like you may know someone, or maybe yourself, who had some disease for a long time, and the person goes to so many doctors, and they give this medicine, and that medicine, and this, but they don't have the right diagnosis. And then as soon as they get the right diagnosis, I was reading about this one woman, she had diabetes, she had all this list of diseases, and then one doctor looked at her, and he said, has your wedding ring stopped fitting you lately, and have your shoes gotten too small? And she said, why, yes, they have. He said, you have a tumor on your pituitary gland, and that's what's causing all these other 10 million diseases. And they took that away, and she was cured of her other, so many other diseases. So it's exactly like that, that we don't understand what the cause is. The cause is I'm not connected with Krishna. That's the cause. Of course I am connected, but I'm denying that I'm connected. So think of material happiness as it's something in front of you, like I said in the beginning, like a carrot. And it looks like happiness. It looks like there's the 12 rasas there, and if I just get this, and I just get this, and every time I try to get it, I just hurt my hand. Because in front of me, you know what there is in front of me, actually? Why is it it looks like happiness, but actually it's just like a solid object. What is it in front of me? Do you know? It's like a mirror. It's a reflection. Where is the real happiness for the conditioned soul? Behind me. So what I've done, I was with Krishna and I bahirmukhe. I turned my face away from Krishna and I just see the reflection. So the real enjoyment is, it's right there. I mean, it's actually right within me, Ishwara Sarvabhutanam Hridayeshwara Janatisthiti. If Krishna's in my heart, then everything must be there, Radharani and Balaram and everybody. Mother Yasoda and Lalita and Vishaka and all of Vrindavan must be right there in my heart. But I'm just hitting the reflection. So I have to turn back to Krishna. Now, how do we know this is true? Maybe Urmila's making all of this up. Maybe there is no complete happiness where there's complete satisfaction without satiation, ever new variety. Maybe this is just some opium of the people. Well, what's the alternative? The alternative is just to say, I'm going to be happy with the suffering sandwich. Is anybody sad? Is anybody going to accept that? The materialists say, oh, we'll just be satisfied, bad with the good, suffering with enjoyment, just focus on the enjoyment part. But can they do that? They can't really do that. We have this urge for complete satisfaction. Prabhupada's saying here, complete satisfaction of all of the senses. All of the senses at once, complete, ever-expanding variety with no suffering. We want that. If we didn't want it, nobody would be able to sell us toothpaste and cars and laundry soap and insurance policies. Because that's how they sell it, isn't it? Drive this car and you'll have unlimited happiness. Get this toothpaste, you'll have unlimited happiness. Where does this desire for unlimited happiness come from? If I'm just a material being, if I'm just a series of cosmic accidents that started with some chemical goopy soup that got hit by a lightning rod and turned into a little cell that somehow morphed into giraffes and palm trees and elephants and people, if that's all I am, then why do I want something impossible? You know, desert creatures, talking about a drop of water in the desert, there are desert creatures who never need to drink water. They're so made, they don't need to drink water directly. But if I go to a desert, I'm thirsty. My lack of satisfaction with material happiness is indicative that I'm not a material creature. If we are all looking for something, my dear friends, and we are all looking for that something, everyone, even the animals, all living entities are looking for that something, it must be because that's our natural state. Where would that desire have come from? Therefore, we must believe that it's real. If we don't believe that it's real, we won't put our energy into trying to get it. And how do we get that real happiness? The opposite to the way we think. Just like Jesus said, those who seek to find their life will lose it. Those who lose their life for my sake will find it. We get this real happiness by giving happiness to Krishna. Exactly like my ears are happy and my nose is happy and my hair is happy if I put food in my mouth. Exactly like that. So I was telling that in our class the other day, but it's such a nice story how in 76 when we were with Srila Prabhupada and my son was on my lap, and Prabhupada said, just like this mother is loving her son without expectation of return, so in this way one should love Krishna. And my father said, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no, but loving Krishna will help her to love her son. Oh, just like that. And then Prabhupada said, just like, if you put food in your mouth, you get good eyesight, but if you put the food in your eyes, you become blind. It's always picture people like shoving carrots in their eyes, you know. So by giving to Krishna, because we're part of Krishna, and he's complete. Om purnamada purnamidam purnat purnat ujjate purnasya purnamadaya purnam eva vasishyate. Prabhupada here is talking about complete happiness. I'm actually complete when I'm connected with the complete. I only feel insufficient and needy and empty because I've pulled out the plug. I have a plug. I just need to put it back in. And it's not like Vrindavan electricity. It's more like New York City electricity. It works. Otherwise, I think I'm running on battery. I have to, you know, where am I? I'm going to use up my battery. I need this, I need that. I just plug in to Krishna. It's not really very hard. One lecture, Prabhupada said, the difference between material consciousness, spiritual consciousness, very slight, like two lines. One line has to go only one millimeter to be in a different place. It's not a big difference. We're eating materialists are eating, we're working, materialists are working. I mean, externally, our external activities are not so different. But a little difference. Just thinking, so simple. Krishna's my boss. Krishna's my company president. And I'm his employee. And what product does Krishna's company sell? What's our product? Krishna Prem. So I work for the love company. Well, I work for the Krishna Prem company. He's my boss. It may appear that someone else is my boss, the temple president or the bank president or my husband or whatever. But really, Krishna's my boss, and all other jivas, they are either co-workers in the Krishna Prema company, or they are suppliers, or they are customers, or they are potential customers. And everything I do can be to satisfy my boss. And we have a nice boss, yogakshem avahamyaham. Whatever I need, he'll supply. He'll supply what I need to do my work. And And he'll even make sure that I get a salary. Of course, just like you work, I said that man worked for an ice cream shop, he got paid with ice cream. So when you work for the Krishna Prema company, you get paid in Krishna Prema. Dasa kori betan mori deha prema dana. Betan is salary. Mahaprabhu says, I want this salary. So you get a salary. You even get vacation times. Everything. He's a good company president. Immediately, our consciousness can be transformed. I'm working now for Krishna. And in ordinary company, the boss is in an office far away. He may not know what you're doing. But in this company, a boss is right there. He's always seeing everything we're doing, hearing everything we're doing. We just have to think about that. Okay, my boss is right here. Let's see, how could I make him happy? How could I sell more love of God? How can I eat more love of God? Because love of God is an interesting thing. Even the more you taste it, the more there is to give. The more you give, the more there is to give. How am I dealing with this supplier? How am I dealing with this coworker? How am I dealing with this customer? Is my boss happy? Is he smiling? Prabhupada said, the residents of Vrindavan, all they're thinking about is Krishna smiling? Have we made Krishna smile? Again, we all understand that. We all have friends that we're happy just to see them happy. So that one switch. You say, oh, Amrila, it's not so easy. The material desires are like the Pacific Ocean. And I feel like that. I look at all my desires and my attachment, and it's just like standing on the beach in Hawaii, one little rock in the middle of the ocean, and there's just ocean and ocean and ocean and ocean and ocean. You have to fly for 5 hours to get away from the ocean. But what did the demigods say? Chapter 2, 10th canto. They said, as soon as you approach the boat, you don't have to get in the boat. Because we can't. We're so insufficient and weak and helpless and small. But you just approach the boat, and what happens to the whole ocean? Nothing. It becomes so small that you don't even realize you stepped over it. And we've all had that experience, at least with little attachments. All of us here, when we first started to become interested in Krishna consciousness, I'm sure we had attachments that we thought were as difficult to give up as an ocean, and now we don't even think about them. If you start preaching to new people and they'll tell you, I have this problem and that problem, and you'll think, why do they think that's a problem? And then you remember, oh yeah, 20, 30, 40 years ago, I thought that was a big problem also. So all of our attachments and illusions about material happiness will become like this, and just immediately. So that is our solution. Our solution is not change around the furniture, try one body to another, try one personality to another, try this thing, that thing, the other thing, this thing, that thing, the other thing. Our solution is turn back, look at Krishna, put in the plug, know Krishna's the company president, see him there all the time smiling, and then we don't have to even think about our own happiness. Savai pum samparo dharma yato bhaktir at hoktateya hoitukhi apratiyata yad yatma supersediti. Then automatically we're so happy that we don't even have to think about our happiness. We forget about our happiness. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Sometimes I get chastisements.
Yeah, one lecture I heard Srila Prabhupada say something that really inspired me. He said that in devotional service, he said there are no inconveniences to devotional service. And if I think there are any inconveniences to devotional service, that's simply my own mental concoction. That was going along with that. Oh, if I move to Vrindavan, then I'll increase my Krishna consciousness. Or if I do this seva, then it'll work. Then it'll work. So that brought that up for me. And then what you were saying from Madhurya Kadambini about how there's the indecisive stage about, oh, should I get married? Should I not get married? Should I do this or that? And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his little book Bhakti Loka, he says that actually the way we overcome this indecisive stage and become firm in our devotion is maintaining enthusiasm for that ultimate goal, the Krishna prema, spiritual happiness. And so, yeah, he says that by utsahan, maintaining this enthusiasm, then even though the anarthas are there, we push through them, we can maintain steady devotion.
Oh, very nice. Of course, we may sometimes want to make some adjustment in our life, but I would put only a small amount of energy into that. Put most of our energy into being Krishna conscious right now, this minute. Not into adjusting for something in the future. You know, be Krishna conscious where you are. If you can make some adjustment, if moving your furniture around helps you in your Krishna consciousness, sure. But not that becomes our whole meditation. You know, otherwise it becomes very future. The same thing. I'll be happy over there. I'll be Krishna conscious over there. One can be Krishna conscious now. Thank you. Actually, another nice thing I didn't get to in Madhurya Kadambini is at the end, in the eighth shower, you can go read it on your own, where because Prabhupada's talking about full enjoyment of all of the senses at once. So this is achieved when the devotee sees Krishna and experiences Krishna's beauty and fragrance and voice and touch and mercy all at one time, and all of the senses become like all of the senses. An incredible description. Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.